So today we are at Barra.
Yes, it's my first time here. It's beautiful. And we are joined by...
Alessandra Vera from Italy, Piemonte from Vera Vittorio Figli Estate in Canelli.
Oh, I have a funny story to tell you because I just
already straight
it
in.
When I went to Piemonte in 2011, I made an appointment thinking I was coming to see you. And I was seeing a different bearer that was making very different wines. And I'm
completely conventional. Yes. And then what's happened? You stay and you try the wines.
I didn't want to be rude, so I just stayed. I sort of got there and then I saw the labels come out and I'm like,
I said,
I'm in the wrong place.
And then you didn't try to come and visit us.
No, because we had made all the appointments before, and that was the only time, and I just was embarrassed. Yes. I was just
Yes, that's bad. That's our fault, because we are not so good in communicating. Yes, they are much more...
Well, I realised as soon as I got there and I thought, how did I mess this up?
Yeah.
So I had the intention to visit you.
That's not the first time that's happened. Anyway, we're here tonight, finally. I found you this time, so...
And what it's do we better. Have? This one, how do you pronounce this? Because I think I'd probably make a mess of it.
This is Vino Bianco, out of any appellation. Very mysterious.
I know, I love the labeling.
Wine. It's a Japanese wine from Piemonte. We say Piemontese sake. No, I'm joking. It's so the name of the wine is Bian Dudui in Piemontese dialect. That means the white of the two.
Okay.
And the 2000.
Okay.
So that's the...
Ah, okay.
actually is a wine from 2000. Bian Dudui is... So we thought that Laureano Serres, when he makes El Blanc del Cinc, in Catalan, so it was something similar. So just to put the vintage on it.
Because it's a dialect, Vino di Tavola.
Of course. And the Japanese
character
means is wa in Japanese and means harmony. That's something. The label was something that happened very casual way. Something really unexpected, like the wine. The wine is something has a very funny. Funny story,
which is perfect because I was actually very excited to hear the story of this wine.
The story
was a happy accident.
It was an happy accident. Yes, exactly. So it was supposed to be a Moscato d'Asti, but then we didn't put in bottle at the right time. So you know, Moscato d'Asti has to have maximum 6.5 degrees of alcohol.
Okay.
And as we didn't put in bottle at the right moment, the fermentation went too far, so we couldn't.
Call it
anymore Moscato d'Asti, and at that point with such a huge quantity of sugar, residual sugar, we didn't know what to do with that, so we just left in a concrete tank we just forgot it. And the unexpected thing and the lucky thing was that it developed a flaw. And that's something really unusual in our area. It's not a vinification, because the wine is always put in bottles so young. It's something that we never experimented before. Probably climate conditions and all.
The perfect storm.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So when we tried it again many years later, in 2016, we decided that it was interesting. That was the right time for him to come out of the tank.
It smells
so it's Moscato. It's really surprising, also for us, because really shows all the potentiality of our Moscato, of our land. So what we do is really to work in a way to let the grape express itself, to express the soil, the terroir. Right. That's what we really are looking for. Mm. And in this wine, you can really find all this. It's still so young, really impressive wine. And the funny thing, now it has been for 2 years in the bottle. Mm. The funny thing is that when we first bottled it, the nutty side of the oxidation was much stronger. And now it's much more integrated, and you have like more the aromatic side of Moscato that is coming back again.
Yeah, that's like floral note there in the background.
Exactly. It's like he's having a second life. Yeah. So it's really amazing. After in the bottle, he's breathing and it's really born to a new life. Really interesting.
Smells like butterscotch as well.
Oh yeah, totally.
Butterscotch tart.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. School dinners.
Yum.
Then what I like is really the... It's so tender.
It's really surprising, yeah.
It's so soft in the palate. Mm-hmm. It's large, big, but soft, and always this the final that is very savory, very
salty.
Yeah,
super savory. Very it's really umami. Not what you expect sort of from the smell, and then...
Yes.
This now is... I kind of see the Japanese character.
Yeah, how it the texture as well, this viscous texture. And
it has a sort of, you said, sake quality to it, totally.
Yes.
It's fabulous. Do you think this is something you would ever try to replicate again? Do you think it would be impossible?
We are trying. We'll see. Yeah. There is something that is waiting. Yeah. The 2007 Moscato.
Yeah.
And we'll see in 7-8 years, something more. Yes. We really need time because of this huge quantity of sugar.
Completely dry. All eaten up.
Yes,
yeah,
of course. After 16
after
years.
Yeah.
It's, no Moscato, no residual sugar left. No, for sure. But the texture, the complexity is still like sort of sweet.
Yeah.
There is this sweetness.
It's got this viscosity about it.
Yes, it's the viscosity, exactly. And it's the same one that you find in fresh Moscato d'Asti, so really the texture that is very creamy and rich. This is because we work with very well-ripened grapes, so completely... there is a lot of structure, complexity, they are very well balanced. So that's why you have
Something I've always noticed in your wines is the colour compared to the very commercial Moscato d'Asti. They almost look like water, and then when you see yours, they have that lovely golden, yellowy colour to them.
It's just the ripened grapes, that's the colour of the grapes. Then, of course, maybe, but I won't say that, maybe a little bit of oxidization because we also use very low quantity of sulfur. Yes. So maybe also this, but it's really the color, the golden color of the grape, of the ripened grape, Moscato.
And in terms of your journey into wine, what's your background? How did you find yourself where you are today?
It's always I was born in the wine. Yeah. So
you did leave for a while, right?
Yes,
you did go to Brussels,
exactly.
Was it? You were studying.
No, I wanted to leave the estate when I was a young girl. And of course, making different experiences, I did political science, and I wanted to be a diplomat. So that was really my big dream. Traveling, meeting people.
But that's kind of what you are now.
Exactly.
That's the point.
But you found yourself through a different route in the same place.
Exactly. In a much better way, I think because I was very disappointed. So yes, I stayed a little bit in Brussels to the EC. Then I went for a few months in Syria, in Damascus. And it was many years ago when it was still quiet. But I was a little bit disappointed because actually you couldn't have this connection with people from the local people because you were, as a diplomat, you were living in a completely artificial world out of the reality. So I realized that I wanted to come back home. I really had this call. I was in Syria, so I've seen the light on the way to Damascus. And I decided that I wanted to go back to work with my brother, that he was actually working already at the estate. And it was very strong, this strong connection with the land that I discovered it was always there.
Right.
Really the... I don't know, the roots. So I have this dream of being very well attached to the soil, to my land, but with the trees that are going very, very far away in the sky, in the world.
Yes.
So yes, now I do travel a lot with the wine, and it's a beautiful experience because for me, it's, of course, I love staying on the estate and doing all the work and like the kind of nature and the life we do there. But I also need this contact and
it feeds you.
Lot of energy to see. It's actually natural wine world is very little. It's we have such a
tight community
connection with the people where we share really so many things, and it's a beautiful experience really to travel to talk about wines to see also with other winemakers of course. First network is really made between us, between the winemakers that we are traveling and meeting everywhere in the world. So it's always nice experience, little bit like being at college always. Doing this tour all together on the bus and the porter, they say okay tomorrow everybody we take on the bus and but also the exchanging the experiences and really wine is first thing for us is really sharing, so it's something that is really strong. And also it's nice when I travel with my wine. So first thing, of course, is the connection with people. The other funny things that what I like is really to see how the wines travels in the world. It's always very exciting to taste my wine
in
other places and to see combination with different in different cultures, different
how they place it.
Exactly.
In dinner, how they drink it.
Yes.
Actually, that was a question I wanted to ask about this, is what would you eat with this?
Many things.
Because I have some ideas of what I would find it delicious
with. Yes. No, I think I can make other people travel with these wines.
Okay.
So this is really because as they are such a huge expression of my land, of the world, of my family, of our...
your journey as winemakers.
Yes, people that drinks in other part of the world that drink these wines are a little bit. It's like they are coming to see me.
That's what I thought was funny about this idea of wanting to be an ambassador. That now you do actually are an ambassador for your home and your place and your land.
And I'm so proud for that. Yes, it's something. Yeah, it's exciting.
I also like the idea that you can travel through drinking something.
Yes,
nice.
Drinking,
transported.
Quite proud and quite lucky also, I think. We are doing nice things. And this wine you can pair it. It's really nice to you can
like
play with that.
Like mushroom risotto or
mushroom
something.
Broth.
Yeah,
broth. Shiitake, with barley, like grains.
Everything that is spicy. Also like...
maybe some Indian food, even.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Cumin. I was going to say,
cumin goes so well. Everything that is also acid, so fat, like herrings, so fat fish with vinegar.
Yum.
This combination.
Another tagine match.
I think Lucas is going to go. I think my boyfriend, tagine, who's a chef, is going to go crazy for this.
We also made one of our traditional dish in Piemonte is bagna cauda.
Oh, I love bagna cauda.
It is made with anchovies and
wine. Oh, you can have red wine as well sometimes with bagna cauda. It's a variation, isn't it?
We normally use red wine, Barbera, young Barbera, but we tried with this, with the Bianco Dui, and it was amazing. With the salinity of the anchovies, and this wine really, it was definitely
vegetables
much better.
Dressed in anchovy sauce with wine. Really.
It was really impressive. Yeah, it was fun. But it's really, because then it's so clean, you can really drink it
with anything. Also, quite soft, it's making me hungry.
With oysters.
Yeah.
Oh, with oysters is beautiful. Mm. All the seafoods and everything that is salted and or acid and
Mommy
really
wines.
many contrast.
I think Lucas is going to go nuts for this.
I think so too. He'll be like, oh my god,
totally,
I can cook this.
Yes.
I think as well. When you talk about the land and farming, I've looked at quite a few pictures of your vineyards. As we know, I didn't make it there myself.
But, don't tell me.
But I recently did a presentation on the natural wine movement, and Doug Regg from London sent me a photograph looking over your vineyard with the vineyards in the background that and yours full of life, all of these flowers, plants growing in between the vines, which we all know to be a healthy vineyard with healthy soil. And then the vineyards next door with the soil that were like white. It was really shocking for me to see this, like,
the
colour.
That the other places have like one insect that live there, like some spider that only exists in the desert or something.
Yes, yes,
crazy.
Absolutely.
In like, you really are the minority, right?
There's unfortunately, unfortunately, yes. But also because in my area, so Canelli, that is mainly the main grape is Moscato there, and there aren't so many producers of Moscato, but the majority sell the grape to big estates, so they don't care about quality. They normally, most of the time, they have a first job, and the vineyards are their second jobs. So they spray whatever they use.
Just easy.
Yes, yeah. Just producing quantity is producing. I don't know. It's really something. Just a product. They don't care about absolutely the quality. They don't care about preserving the soil. And this is really big shame. Yes. No, we are so lucky because our land, our vineyards are really well preserved. We had the chance to have a very open-minded father, Vittorio. So when he started in 64, he decided that he wanted to work. He didn't want to poison himself. We were working there with all the family, the kids. So he was saying, no way, I'm not going to use all these chemicals. It was really the area of maximum production of and use of chemicals.
And that was in the 60s. Which was when all the Green Revolution stuff was happening, so there was so much use of chemicals at that time, and get quantity.
Exactly, yes. Mm. And it was really completely opposite. Yes, So we are lucky to have this land that is so alive and so well preserved, and that's really a good thing.
So the style and wines that you make today, would you say that's an extension of what you learned from your dad?
Of course.
He was making the same sort of style.
Say is a way of working in a traditional way, but when traditional doesn't mean things of 20 years ago, that means going back. Yes, exactly. Mm. So the estate, the first that started making wine in my estate was 3, 4, 5 generations ago in 1758. Mm. And so the way of we really want to preserve also this tradition, this know-how, the taste of the wine, the land, so we are so little bit severe in this, but it's something that otherwise is going to be lost. To be, so we really wanted to preserve that memory.
Well, you see it in the final product as well. In the final wines, you see that there is a spirit and a character and this unique quality in the wines.
They are really unique, I think. They're really different from all the others. They have this strong character.
It's really
that's an important thing to do. I think everyone should do that, to have... So to travel with all different wines in all different countries. Yeah.
This particular Moscato, not this vintage, but I think it was the 14 vintage. I happen to have a few bottles at the Michelberger. I had some that got put on the side and left, and everyone was like, Moscato Jasti, that's like 2 or 3 years old, is it going to be any good? Which usually is a good question. Yes. My God, it tasted amazing. Actually, it was almost better.
Yes.
Oh, funny.
Our Moscato is better. So that's why I say this is also like really shows the potentiality this Biardo Douai that is old. So you see really how it can age. Exactly, yes. And our Moscato d'Asti is the only Moscato that can age and can really becomes definitely better. So when you have the fresh vintage, the fresh Moscato of the year, you have, of course, the although the fresh fruit, although the primary aromas, it's just like eating fresh grape. After at least 1 year in the bottle, so the sugar are still there, but becomes much more integrated. You lose this floral, you lose the fruitiness, but you have a really interesting taste of mint, very herbal. Mint, lemongrass, and that gives even more freshness to the wine.
For me, really impressive, because we were talking a little bit about this before, Gwen and I. For people who hadn't tried Moscato d'Asti before, what would they expect? What's typical? What do most people produce, and how's your style different?
Different, right.
This is really annoying because Moscato d'Asti has such a bad reputation around the world.
Right.
And I think. Cheers. Also, when I'm doing some taste, sometimes I really have to struggle with people to make them taste our Moscato. Say, oh no, Moscato, no, I don't want to taste it. Please, yes, you have to taste this one. And then right away you see just
the
a big smile on
their
face. And so then you say, oh, yeah, that's different. That's for sure.
My understanding of Moscato d'Asti, when if somebody says, what is it? I think of a low alcohol, lightly sparkling, lightly sweet, aromatic wine from the north of Italy. All of these sort of peach, pear, sometimes apple, floral notes. It's kind of like a sweeter, flatter version of Prosecco in many ways.
Exactly. Yes. For sure.
When we talk about the masses.
Because it has been transformed in a completely industrial wine.
An industrial brand, isn't it?
Yes,
really?
Yes. And because there was such a big demand of Moscato, the original area of Moscato d'Asti, the original area, the best area, has been so enlarged to such a huge surface,
right,
where there is no good conditions for the growing of Moscato. And then, so they are just looking for the quantity of the grapes, so without caring about the quality.
It becomes formulaic rather than...
Yes, and then, why? Because then the Moscato, since the 70s, with the modern technology, it's very easy to make Moscato in the cellar. So it's a wine that is completely made like a Coke, like any soft drink in the cellar, in the industry. But Moscato has such a huge, complex story. So Moscato is a beautiful grape, as we were showing with the other wine. And so in our area, only Canelli was the area, the best area for the production, because it could reach such a big concentration of sugar, very nice ripeness, but keeping the freshness, the acidity. So it was really
balanced.
Exactly. Right. So in the past, with no technology, what happened? So a little bit of the story of Moscato, and I still remember my parents doing that until the end of the 70s. So very well ripened grapes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you have to have low yield.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only condition, the first condition.
Yes.
But then...
Because if you have higher yields with Moscato, it drastically affects the quality of the fruit.
Of course, it doesn't get ripened. Yeah. But then, after that, they used to store the grape for almost 1 week on a, like sort of, not passito, but just to have an even bigger concentration.
Okay.
So they just put the Moscato, a layer of Moscato
on
the porch. No.
Okay. Outside.
On the soil.
Yeah.
Not in the sun,
just in
the shadow. For almost 1 week. So there was a beautiful concentration of sugar, concentration of aroma also, because then you had
starting to raise enough, a little bit of botrytis? Yes, of course.
Always. We always have a little bit of botrytis on our Moscato. And then you had to preserve the sugar. So that concentration of sugar, this richness, really helped the wine not to, to stop the fermentation, not to have a very fast fermentation right away.
So it starts slower because there's so much sugar, it takes
Exactly. So you have to keep the sugar, a huge quantity of residual sugar, because then it was put in bottle in springtime.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to slow down the fermentation was this concentration, and then they used to make, it was the cold of the natural cold of the climate. So yeah, the cellars were always facing north and open cellars to have the cold from outside. And when the fermentation was going too fast, they were filtering with what we call sacchi olandesi, filtro olandese. It's
Dutch filtration.
I don't know why. But,
they like to filter things.
It was filtered in was a static filtration on fabric. Pouches.
Pouches. Yep.
Yes.
I think I saw this from the ceiling. Yeah, these sort of things hanging down.
Yes, exactly. And it was such a awful, huge work because in the cold of the winter you had to wash by hand with cold water all these pouches.
Yeah.
And it was really tough. And of course, the women were doing this tough work always. But and then. So that was the reason why only in four centuries, only in Canelli area, was the Moscato d'Asti was produced. And after, with all the technology and controlled temperature, that's easy and you can do whatever. But yeah, the secret of this Moscato, why it's so different? Because of the grape, first thing. Because that's the only Moscato that has no selected yeast, so just makes spontaneous fermentation. So you don't have any... You have such a huge different aromas in our Moscato, and every vintage has its own character, its own aroma that goes from rose when it's fresh, it goes to apricot, pears, honey, more citric, or really white flowers. Such a huge, and every vintage has its own. It is so funny. And then, it's you have this, as we were saying, the texture is very creamy. It's rich. It's very.
There's soul in the wine.
Yeah,
it's got lots of character. And those, the way that the wine was historically made, is that how you're still making? You're not still using those fabric pouches today?
No. I would like to, and I will again. I hope one day. It's not possible to do that way for and having the appellation Moscato d'Asti.
Okay, really?
Because with the Moscato d'Asti, you have to control, of course, the exact quantity of sugar, the residual sugar in the bottle, the pressure, because it's capo raso, so not just a normal cork.
Yep.
So for the appellation, must be less than 2 bars of pressure. And they come and try check the pressure before bottling.
Aha.
Yes. So it's of course, if we will make hope soon just traditional ancestral Moscato, that we couldn't call it Moscato d'Asti. That's for sure.
That was kind of the question that I'd been sitting on as well. Okay. Was, have you ever thought about ditching the appellation altogether?
Yes.
Instead of calling it Moscato d'Asti, would you ever go Bera or something?
Yeah. I couldn't Bera and nothing else. Because we couldn't call Moscato.
Yeah, because Vino di Tavola doesn't let you put the grape variety on the label.
We could say...
So you'd have to give it a sexy name.
Not even Vino da Tavola, but probably Filtrato Dolce, because it's not even a wine.
Oh, my goodness.
Because of the low alcohol. So Moscato d'Asti is the only kind of
category
this wine that is considered wine, but if we go out, it would be filtrato dolce, so mosto parzialmente filtrato, so must have unfinished fermentation, something like that. So not very nice. Should be Bera. Yes, we trans, they call it Bera. That's for sure. It's a shame because we think we are really the last depository of the tradition. Of course, we always struggle with the when they do the tasting, because they always say us, not the tasting, for the appellation, yes, the exams for the appellation. They always say it's too, be careful, too evoluted. So the words they used to...
Oh my goodness. They
because of the colour, they probably assume it, because they see that the colour, so something's got to be wrong.
And also the nose, that is not
different
so fresh and not so floral. Right. So they use attention, be careful, protect it. Protect with means, just add sulfur. And too evoluted. And we always have problems like this.
It's so funny because you'd think that as long as you follow the rules, it shouldn't matter what it tastes like. That's your choice as a winemaker. It's like, yeah, that's,
no, it doesn't work like this.
The wine laws don't work like that, and they're very conservative.
They say us that this is not representative for Moscato, that it's not a real Moscato.
And you're like, hang on a minute, this is the real thing. The real Everything thing. Else yes, is the exactly. fake. Yeah. Yes.
But this, like the DOCG, like the control forces of wine, let's say, they're being funded by the larger producers as well. Yes. So it's in their interest to protect
that style. Exactly, that's the point, yes. Yeah.
And not historical. Yes. Yeah.
So we will try to make anyway.
So you're like the enemy, because it's like,
we are the
enemy. She's showing them what it should really taste like. We can't have that getting out there.
We are the enemy.
You're the revolutionary.
Yeah, always. Unfortunately.
Well, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for giving
Absolute
up your time.
Pleasure. Thank you. I'll try both of these.
Nice being here in Berlin.
Yeah, I'm totally going to take these home.
Yeah,
and yeah. Love it. No, cheers again. Thank you.
Thank you, Alessandra.
Grazie. Ciao.